The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the Book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
On Super Bowl Sunday from the heartland of America, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. It's a little crowded in here because we've got some guests.
We do.
Or at least one. I don't know if the other one's coming or not, but we've got one. Hey, sit down and pull up some coffee and
drink some chair and join us for the next
Mix
hour.
Mix some metaphors.
As we welcome from the great state of Texas, writer, director, and now author, as he continues his plot to multimedia domination of the world.
Renaissance man.
Yes, Rob Skiba, author of the new book, Babylon Rising and the First Shall Be Last. Rob, welcome to PID Radio.
Thank you, Derek and Sharon. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're doing
we are so glad you're here. You've already done VFTB with Derek, so, you know, I don't know. Do we have a third show we can do?
Let's take over the world.
Yes. Right.
Well, it's interesting times as we record this, and it's kind of funny that
it
shows
Super
kind
Bowl
of
Sunday.
Where our focus is. You know, it's Super Bowl Sunday, and Rob and I, when we set the interview time for A View from the Bunker, it's like, wait a minute, isn't that Super Bowl Sunday? I don't know. It's like, well, who's playing? Not the Colts, not the Bears. I don't care.
The Giants.
But the New York Nephilim will be one of the teams competing. So I predict they'll win the game.
Playing against the Patriots.
Yes.
That red, white, and blue, Patriots.
So, yeah, Kent.
Yeah, that could be a scary omen.
Do you think that the Giants are playing according to the Book of Eli?
Is there a Book of Eli?
The movie, the Book of Eli.
Oh,
remember that?
Yeah, so how culturally
sort of
unaware.
A post-apocalyptic book.
Yeah, Denzel Washington.
How did you like that movie?
You know, I haven't seen it yet. Is it good?
I was referred to go by a friend of mine who's pretty high up in the Christian community. I'm not going to mention his name, but he said, Rob, you really got to go see this movie. So I went, and I'm about 20 minutes into the movie going, did I misunderstand him? am I in the wrong theater? There's a lot of bad language, a lot of violence, you know, and I'm really wondering what I'm doing there. But as the movie progresses, I start to see kind of why he recommended I go see it. And by the end of the movie, when it finally finished, and the credits were starting to roll, I was sitting there going, wow, did I just see what I think I just saw? And I had my 16-year-old nephew with me. He turned to me and he said, man, this movie makes me want to read my Bible more. And I said,
awesome.
What? It, you know, and my 16-year-old nephew took his Bible to a secular high school the next day.
Hmm.
Oh my gosh.
And my niece, who saw it also, she's a year older, had the same reaction and took her friends to see it about five or six times, I think. I said, wow, we've got to capture, you know, I'm not advocating bad language and violence, but we've got to capture that formula because it is really having an impact on this generation.
Isn't it sad that so many movies have to incorporate that?
Yeah, it is sad, but I will say I found it to be a very powerful movie. I really did. And I saw it a couple times.
Well, apparently you can stream it on Netflix and it is in our queue, so
I recommend it with the caveat and caution that I just mentioned, but otherwise, it's a very interesting movie.
You know what? There is hardly anything out there other than the Word of God, you know, the Bible itself, that is totally safe for a Christian to read. And there are some Christians who might even complain about the Book of Solomon.
Oh, yeah.
Song of Psalms.
Sure.
Song of Songs. Sorry. Pull up some coffee.
As we mentioned Super Bowl Sunday, and during the conversation we had in A View from the Bunker, talking about some of the interesting numbers connected with the occult world and prophecy.
Let me get really quickly. We just had In Bulk. I wrote a very short piece in my blog about it, SharonKGilbert.com. And it's really, In Bulk is the old Gaelic name for what we call Groundhog's Day. And it goes back to Rome and pre-Rome. It was celebrated in Rome as Lupercalia, actually celebrated in the middle of the month on the old calendar, which corresponds to about February 2nd on our calendar. So it's a cross-quarter holy day, so to speak, and it's called Wiccan Day. But it also, this being that this year is a leap year, February 2nd was the 33rd day of the year with 333 days left.
Very nice. Interesting.
In the year 2012.
And as we get to the Super Bowl then, and what is rapidly becoming America's second most popular holiday, which is Super Bowl Sunday, there are a couple of interesting connections of the number 33 to this day. For example, there's a promotion being run where you can find to find 33 supercars around Indiana to unlock special deals connected with the Super Bowl.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Why 33 cars? I mean, this is Super Bowl 46. Why not 46 cars? I don't know.
Yeah. I always wonder when these numbers come out and there's just, they seem like memes. I say, why did Obama say, my next 100 days will be so successful that I'll complete them in 72 days, and on the 73rd day I should rest? Is that just coincidence? Why didn't he pick 81 or, 38 or some other random number? Mm-hmm. Why does it always have to do with, why do all of these things always line up with some kind of occult ritual or some kind of number associated with a secret society or something?
A 13, a 33, or a 72, as we discussed on A View from the Bunker.
Well, let me also bring in that the Giants are playing at the Lucas Oil Stadium. Lucas, as in Lucifer. Oh. I'm not saying Lucas Oil is evil. I'm just saying that's an interesting, because that's sort of a cousin to, it comes from.
Same root word.
Exactly. Yeah. It does. And it's on the 39th parallel.
Listen to this. When you were talking about that this was the Lupercalia.
Right.
If I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
I had actually written about this a while ago and forgot all about it. Listen to this. Believe it or not, there is a character in ancient Wiccan mythology named CERN.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on my blog called Concerned with Saturn. And I spelled C-E-R-N, part of Concerned, with capital letters.
Yes.
Representing CERN. So what is also interesting about this particular myth is how, yet again, it also seems to be directly tied to Nimrod and the many other myths associated with him. For instance, there's a character in the Wiccan mythology called Lupercus. In the myth, he is known as the Great Golden Wolf. He was born on the night, guess what, of the winter solstice, December 25th. Imagine that. In ancient Rome, his feast day was known as Lupercalia, and it was celebrated on February. This myth is where we get the imagery of Romulus and Remus nursing from a wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something else I found interesting about the Lupercalia festival is that it also seemed to be directly associated with Pan.
Yes.
We learned that Pan, Yeshua, made a point of showing us this particular god of shepherds. He stood in front of the Greek god of shepherds, Pan, and asked the question in Caesarea Philippi. The good shepherd asked, "Who do men say that I am?" So it's a good shepherd stood in front of the Greek god of shepherds. Well, like Pan, Lupercus was thought of as a god of shepherds. In fact, Lupercus and Pan are often thought to have been one and the same. If so, we have yet another form of Nimrod.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I mentioned that same thing in my little article, is that at Lupercalia, the Luperci, who are the priests of Lupercus, actually sacrifice at least two goats and a dog. The dog representing the wolf, and the goats, of course, representing Pan. And they take the bloody skins of these sacrificed goats, put part of the skins over themselves to mimic Pan, and then they go out into the streets with the remains formed into these bloody whips, and they actually strike naked women in the streets to ensure fertility and safe births.
Nice. As well,
this is the Halloween week. This is the holiday we call Valentine's Day.
Nice. Well, today we're throwing a pigskin around the Giants. Right?
Well said. At Lucas Oil Stadium on the 39th parallel.
And
just
by the
so
way,
you understand, we don't look at, and I know, Rob, you're the same way, we do not look at these numbers because we think that there is magic in them.
Absolutely not.
No. We are looking at what the enemy thinks these numbers mean.
Right.
And there may actually be in the demonic realm some form of limited magic allowed them by God. But the only source of real truth, the truth, is the Word of God.
Yeah. And it's kind of an interesting aside. You know, we talk about, the patriots and the foundation of the United States and some of the men involved in framing the Constitution and guiding the colonies to independence, who perhaps had the idea of creating a new Atlantis from this land, comes a rather bizarre story about our... our first president.
Have you talked to him about this yet?
I have not. So we're going to spring this on Rob.
oh, boy.
Yeah. George Washington died on December 14th of 1799. And upon his death, his body was packed on ice. he reportedly told his doctors, you know, I die hard, but I'm not afraid to go. And as he was being prepared for his funeral, he was packed on ice. Well, along comes a fellow named William Thornton. Now, William Thornton is best known as the architect who designed the U.S. Capitol. And Tom Horn has quite a bit to say about the U.S. Capitol in his book. And, of course, I'm not going to remember the name of it now, but it was Apollyon
Rising.
Thank you. In which he described the dome as the womb of ISIS. And, of course, then you've got the Washington Monument, which
Wiener.
Is the, yeah, the Lucifer's wiener. But Thornton came calling at Mount Vernon and pitched an idea to Martha Washington. He believed that he could thaw George Washington's body by the fire, rub it with blankets to warm it back up, and then infuse the body of George Washington with lamb's blood to reanimate George Washington.
Really?
Yeah, thus creating sort of the first presidential zombie.
Yeah.
Although some might argue Gerald Ford, no, that's, I'm sorry, no, it's a bad joke. But they, no, he actually wanted to reanimate George Washington, and wow. Martha finally rejected the idea, not because she was creeped out or anything. She just thought that after leading the Continental Armies to victory, that George deserved a rest. So anyway, that but you know, Thornton was not a crackpot. I mean, he's the guy who designed the U.S. Capitol, and he also had a medical degree from the University of Edinburgh. So he wasn't a loon. It's just that in the 7th or 18th century.
As in Edinburgh, Scotland?
Scotland, yes.
Yes.
Wow.
Part of the Enlightenment.
That is so crazy. I have to tell you, everything I research, I don't care what the subject is, I always end up in Edinburgh, Scotland sometime.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, a lot of the loons, and literally the loons, because the illumination of the Enlightenment Society that began in that little circle in Edinburgh, Scotland, they ended up, many of them, they fanned out and they formed... You know, a group that I've talked about in my discussions, the Lunatics.
Wow.
The Lunar Society.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. I have to tell you a story about the Washington Monument. You know, we had the earthquake there a few months ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's tilted now. You can't go in it anymore. Well, literally the day before that, there's a group of us. We do a Torah study on Saturdays, and we were studying in the Old Testament how the Joshua and those guys are going into the land, and God would command them to tear down the Asherah poles and all the representations of the false gods just to cleanse the land, get rid of it, you know? And, of course, I have, like Tom Horn, I've done a lot of research on our monuments and stuff, and I'm of the mindset of like, yeah, you know, let's go. And, of course, you can't do that. But the woman that was sitting next to me was an older woman. She says, no, we need to pray. And while I totally agree and understand the power of prayer, I'm kind of more of a, like, just let's go action kind of guy, you know,
mm-hmm.
But agreed with her after being rebuked and having some serious conviction, you know, I said, okay. So as a group, we all prayed against the false gods of this nation represented by the various monuments and stuff. And we really went to prayer. And it was the next day that earthquake happened and the monument went, it tilted.
And
of course, everybody on Facebook is like, Rob, oh! You know, they're all Facebooking. Well, I just found out, I don't know, what was that, a month or two ago when that happened, but I just found out last week, I think it was, or a week before, we went to a meeting with this woman who wrote a book called Declare Your Dependence, and she's on kind of the same page as we are on these things. Well, she was in Washington, D.C., kind of promoting her book and against all these things, and she was walking around, the Lord gave her a phrase that she was to pray and repeat through Washington, D.C., and the phrase was from Revelation that Christ is the one who was and is to come. And that seems like an odd prayer, you know. Yeah. We know that, but that's the prayer, you know, that she was told. So her and her group did that. Well, there was another group of people, New Agers and whatnot, that were totally against her, and they organized a rally of 1,000 people that were supposed to come against her.
Hmm.
And she's just walking around proclaiming the one who was and is to come. Well, of course, in the last show, we talked about that the Osiris Nimrod is the one who was and is not and yet shall be. And that's what those monuments represent. Well, 1,000 people gathered. Remember that snowstorm we had that wiped out the East Coast?
Yes.
That was the day it happened. It wiped out the everything, you know, up the East Coast, especially in Massachusetts where I'm from. Well, 1,000 people were supposed to be in Washington, D.C. to protest her, this woman that was in her work. Well, only 18 people showed up because of that snowstorm. Well, and she's telling me the story, and then I told her about the story about the praying against the Washington Monument and everything, and she said, are you kidding me? I had a whole group of people praying on the same day that we were praying for the exact same thing.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
So I you may have saw it around that time. I went on a daily prayer assault on Facebook, just coming against all of the principalities, powers, spiritual wickedness, and dark places, high places over our nation. And, you know, I believe we have that power, and I just share that as a testimony, because how amazing is it that two groups unrelated to each other, not even knowing each other, praying the same thing, and the next day the Washington Monument goes,
Err. Well, you know, we all know the verse that says, where two or more are gathered in my name, there I will be in the midst of them. I don't think that we have to be in the same room. I'm not even sure we have to be in the same time.
Yeah.
I think long as we each of us belong to a small group or even on our own, do this on the internet, I think that there is a joining that can take place. Oh, Sam, where are you going?
He said, I'm out of here.
He says, look, this is just going way too far afield. I really think that as long as, you know, there are many people like you who are doing these kind of things on Facebook and other pages, and I really think these things have power. So don't feel, I guess what I'm saying is, don't feel like you're all alone out there in internet land, you know, that you think that, okay, what can I do? I live by myself. I don't have a home church. I don't have anybody to talk to about these things. I sit and I listen to these shows and I have the internet access. You can make a huge difference. Start praying on the internet. And as those other people share and comment to your comments on Facebook, let's turn this, frankly, I think, device of the enemy and the enemy's, you know, minions, let's turn it on their heads, heap coals of fire on their heads, and use this for the Lord.
Amen. When we went to D.C., that prompted chapter 4 of my book. The reflection pool between the Washington Monument and the Capitol actually is what connects the phallus symbol with the womb.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The reflection. Well, apparently that earthquake messed that up, too.
Aww.
So you know, yeah. Let's go on a prayer assault. I'm in.
One of the things we didn't talk much about and didn't have time to talk about when we were discussing your book, Babylon Rising, and the First Shall Be Last, was Iraq and the role that Iraq plays in the fulfillment of prophecy. I mean, it's significant in biblical history because that was the land in which Nimrod first developed his kingdom. It was centered at, the town of Erech, E-R-E-C-H. And it's significant, I think, that when Iraq was created after World War I, that they chose for the name of this new nation, when they drew the lines on the map, they chose the name of the center of Nimrod's kingdom for this new nation. Of course, Eridu, which was the site of the old temple of Enki, which is where Nimrod built his Tower of Babel, is in Iraq. What role is it going to play as we come down to the cosmic endgame here? What significance did America's invasion of Iraq have to play in all of this?
That's very interesting. Part of the title is Babylon Rising and the First Shall Be the Last. I focus on Nimrod, but I believe that the first Babylon will be the last Babylon as well. I subscribe to the idea that when I read scripture, I'm just going to take it literally. While a lot of people like to say that America is spiritual Babylon and that there's all kinds of theories about what Babylon is in the last days. I think it's the real place in what we would now call Iraq, mm-hmm. Is going to rise again. In fact, it appears to be on its way. December 21st, 2010, Iraq announced its fully formed government. And, of course, we just recently had our troops withdrawn, supposedly, because now they've been set up to be a sovereign nation and to start working on their own again. So I believe that Babylon is going to rise in the last days as a dominant player on the world stage. And I talk a little bit about their currency. I don't know if you want to go there or not, but in the book, because it's really interesting what happened with that currency when we went in and kind of took over in 2003.
Well, yeah, you know, dive into that. I mean, anything that relates to geopolitics and prophecy, you know, that's...
Yeah.
We're ready for that.
Sure.
Well, and again, it has that one of the magic numbers, 322. The Iraqi dinar originally had a value of $3.22 for one dinar back in the 80s, I believe it was. I got a chart on there. It shows, in my book, talking about that in chapter 6 called The Omega Plan, and I put a question mark there just speculating, is this how it's going to play out in the last days on the geopolitical stage? And, you know, the U.S. currency, U.S. dollar, has been the world standard, you know, for I guess since FDR. Would you agree with that?
Bretton Woods. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
It was decided that the dollar, we'd go off the gold and everything would be pinned to the petrodollar.
Yeah, so is it just a coincidence then that our everything starts to collapse here and the U.S. dollar, it takes the whole world down? You know, mm-hmm. Everybody starts going down. And so I speculate in my book that looking at what happened in Iraq in 2003, when we went in there, and thank you, Sharon, for sending me that tidbit about and correcting me on one of my dates, but yes, the U.S. military occupation phase of Iraq began in May. We started the shock and awe campaign on the evening of March 21st, going into the morning of 3-2-2.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. March 22nd, the shock and awe campaign.
Yeah, 3-2-2-2-0-0-3, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you got this 3-2-2 thing going on all over the place. And, of course, the Skull and Bones on their logo is the Skull and Bones with the numbers 3-2-2. So, I began to wonder, what's up with this 3-2-2 thing? And looking at what happened after we went into Iraq and toppled Saddam Hussein's regime and everything, and of course, the military occupation begins in May, a month after supposedly archaeologists found the tomb of Gilgamesh, who is Nimrod. And Chase Bank goes in there and leads a 13-bank consortium to establish the new central bank of Iraq. And it doesn't take much research to realize that central bankers are really the ones kind of running everything these days.
Well, no, that's true. The rebels in Libya created a central bank long before they got Muammar Gaddafi.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's really interesting and fascinating research. And there's a documentary by Leonard Ulrich. Have you seen it? New World Order, Biblical Prophecy, Secret Society's Biblical Prophecies.
Yeah, I think I have. It's been a while.
Volume 1.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. In fact, I helped him a little bit. Well, sounding board. But anyway, I've not watched the whole thing. But
You need to watch it. He does a fantastic job. I had him on my radio show, too. He's just a great guy. But he does a really good job of showing the central bank's roles in the world. And in fact, on my in my book, I created a diagram that shows the pyramid with the government, with all living things at the bottom, the government above all living things, corporations above the government, big banks above the corporations, central banks above that, IMF above that, and central bank of central banks above that, of course, all feeding up to the global elite. So it's like wealth and resources go from all living things up to the global elite, and domination and control comes down from the global elite to all living things. And I believe that's the way it works out there in the world. And when I was looking at what happened in Iraq, we go in there, Chase Bank leads a 13-bank, there you go, mm-hmm. you got another number, right? Osiris was chopped into 14 pieces, 13 pieces were found.
Mm-hmm.
All these numbers are there. So they set up a 13-bank consortium that sets up the central bank of Iraq. And they get rid of all of the old dinars that had Saddam Hussein's picture and stuff on it. And De La Rue, which is one of the premier, if not the premier, currency printers in the world, created the new Iraqi dinar, sometimes referred to as the NID, New Iraqi Dinar, or the IQD. as the new currency for Iraq. Well, it's monopoly money. It's, you know, their highest.
And so is ours.
Well, yeah, ours is too, but people are still using it as if it had real value. Their value plummeted to 3,000 dinar to one U.S. dollar.
Huh.
From where it used to be, $3.22 for one dinar. So, you know, you got 322 to one, and then it plummets to 3,000 to one. And since 2003, it has steadily increased in value from 3,000 to one to roughly 1163, 1170 or so to one. I think it's where it's at now, somewhere in that range. So it's steadily been increasing. So while the whole world's economies are collapsing and their currency is devaluing, here's this Iraqi dinar thing. It's just quietly in the background. Nobody's paying any attention to it. Increasing in value. Of course, now it's still monopoly money, you know, 1,000 to 1, let's say. But there, all the speculators are going crazy because they believe that it could revalue or reinstate. A revalue would be, let's say, a 1-to-1. It just overnight revalues to 1 dinar equals $1. Or reinstate to where it's back to $3.22 to 1 dinar. Because Iraq has the natural resources to sustain that value, mm-hmm. you know, especially with oil. So if that happened, of course, I speculate in my book that, okay, if people like me, let's say, could go to, at that time, I went to Chase Bank, and I actually just did a currency exchange like I used to do on my mission trips. I said, hey, I'd like to exchange X amount of dollars for Iraqi currency, the Iraqi dinar, and they gave it to me. They stopped doing that a few years ago. You can still get it online or whatever. But the speculators thinking, wow, you know, for whatever you get, you invest in dinar, if it revalues at a 1-to-1 and you bought it, let's say, 1,000-to-1, that's a pretty good ROI.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. return on investment. If it RIs at $3.22, why? Wow, how you doing? So in war, they say, you know, you lob a bomb into a city after a military target, a lot of times there's what's called collateral damage, where civilians get hurt. I believe speculators like me would be a collateral beneficiary of a plan if this thing, in fact, did RV or RI, because you got to know that people like Chase Bank and, oh, by the way, all the people involved with this central bank of Iraq are the same people involved with setting up the Federal Reserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The creature of Jekyll Island,
yes.
G. Edward Griffin would say. Right? So looking at the players involved, I began to think, oh, okay, something's going on here. And when De La Rue printed the currency, they put some of the most anti-counterfeit measures of any other currency on the planet in this monopoly money. So, I mean, it's got watermarks. It's got ultraviolet marks. It's got
a picture of Marduk on it.
Yeah, it's got all kinds of stuff
on it. It looks to me like it's got a picture of, I don't know if it's supposed to be Nimrod or what, but there's some really tall guy sitting on a throne.
Yeah, it's Marduk, which...
Marduk is actually the Leviathan sort of snaky thing on the left side of the back. But there's somebody sitting on the throne. Is that Nimrod on the back of the $25,000 bill?
I'm going to have to pull it up and look at it. I forget, but, you know, it's interesting that that currency has both I think it's Arabic language, mm-hmm. As well as English on it.
Well, of course it has English. I mean, come on, we own the country.
Yeah, why not? I mean, the oil contract that they drew up, or the policies on divvying up the oil money was written in English, not
and
Arabic.
We're still there where we are patrolling our you know, interest. Embassy, our interests, our embassy with predator drones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One of the largest embassies in the world.
If not the largest. And we also have, I don't know if we've shut it down or turned it over to the Iraqis permanently, but Camp Alpha, which was established in 2003, was at the site of the Hanging Gardens.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And, you know, I speculate in the book, and I just, you know, I put it out there as speculation. But it seems to me with all the players involved in this, here's what I'm thinking. I didn't get involved with this because of the geopolitical news. I didn't get involved with it because of finance websites or anything like that. I got involved because I take the scriptures literally, and it says in the last days that Babylon's going to rise again. And so I'm looking at that saying, well, I believe it will become a superpower in the last days. And I began to think about the wise men that came to Jesus. They came from the same region, bearing, I believe, the wealth that was stored up by Daniel 500 years prior. So,
Can you back that up, or is that just speculation?
Yeah, sure. Daniel served under three kings in Babylon,
mm-hmm.
Prophet Daniel, and he amassed enormous wealth working for these guys and died a eunuch having no heirs. So many people think that he set up a school of astronomy, not astrology, but, looking
right.
at Maserati.
Studying the signs, exactly.
The signs that God put into place, astrology is just a counterfeit. And I always maintain if there's a counterfeit, then there must be a real
right.
thing for them to counterfeit, you know. So that being the case, I believe that, there is a legitimate way of looking at the stars. God said he put the stars in the skies to be signs for us. So, and that's what I think the Magi schooled in Daniel's school looked up. And I believe the alignment, interestingly enough, and I document this in my book, was September 11th, 3 B.C.,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Mike Heiser agrees with you on
yeah,
that one.
Yeah, Mike Heiser and a few others. I think Chuck Missler, I think, talks about that too. But, I did it. I figured it out for myself, even without looking at their research, but came to the same conclusion using the software Stellarium. Stellarium.
Is that what Mike Heiser uses too? I know that. I've looked at that. I have that same Stellarium. I have the
yeah,
same
Stellarium.
Thing.
Yeah, Stellarium. I don't know if he used that or not, but it's a free software. You can get it at stellarium.org. And just download it. And mm-hmm. what I had to do to kind of get to arrive at the numbers and the date and everything was I had to, and I give instructions in my book on how to do it, but you have to set your clock on your computer
mm-hmm.
to Jerusalem time or Babylon, Iraq, or Baghdad, Iraq time to get you in that. So your computer will reckon the time with the software.
Yeah.
So you set your computer there, and then you set your location, your view to, I went and set it to Baghdad, Iraq. And then back off the clock in the software to – the software reckons it as negative 2 instead of 3 BC. It's just negative
sure.
2. But, yeah, you'll see the exact alignment that John describes in Revelation chapter 12. You know, the virgin with the sun in her
– woman clothed mm-hmm. in the sun, yeah.
The woman clothed in the sun, 12 stars at her head, the moon at her feet. That exact alignment happens on September 11th. So, you know, again, it makes you go, you know, what's really going on with September 11th, right?
Well, you know, I think that the temptation when we read the book of Revelation written by the Apostle John, that he's looking at our timeline. He's looking at one particular point in time. But I think it's very possible that he was seeing a lot of things at the same time and wasn't necessarily being looking at, the 21st century. He, as you say, he may have come look and see over here and it's 3 B.C.
Oh, yeah. I believe, because I don't think God's bound by our time.
Oh, heaven knows. No.
Yeah,
He is not. He is the creator of time.
So John's in a non-linear realm, looking at linear events and mm-hmm. just doing the best he can to document it.
And it had to be really disorienting in many ways.
Well, yeah. I don't personally believe that Revelation is written in chronological order. I see things kind of bouncing all over the place in Revelation. But a little sidebar, something I found really interesting studying this, all this stuff out, I put two columns together where I could look in the Old Testament and find stuff related to the last days, and in the right column, putting scriptures that go along with them from the New Testament, and found something really interesting that appears to be time travel in the Bible. In the book of Revelation, chapter 11, where John is handed a measuring stick to go measure the temple.
Mm-hmm.
It says, I was given a measuring stick and was told, go and measure the temple of God and the altar and count the number of worshipers. Do not measure the outer courtyard, for it has been turned over to the nations, and they will trample the holy city for 42 months. Well, when I was doing this parallel thing, I was looking in the book of Ezekiel
mm-hmm.
in chapter 40, and there's some similar descriptions where God tells, here, eat this. He eats a scroll, and it tastes sweet but bitter to his stomach. And he says, hang on, and I'm going to have you prophesy to many people.
Right.
Similar dialogue happens with Ezekiel that happens with John. But then you read in Ezekiel chapter 40, he says, in the vision of God, he took me to the land of Israel, this is verse 2, and set me down on a very high mountain. From there I could see what appeared to be a city across from me toward the south. And as he brought me nearer, I saw a man whose face shone like bronze standing beside a gateway entrance, and he was holding in his hand a measuring stick. And so I'm like, wait a minute. And then you keep reading in Ezekiel, and he gives all these height, depth, and width dimensions of everything except the outer courtyard. When you're reading in Revelation or Ezekiel 40, verse 17 through 19, the only dimension that's given is the distance between the two gates, but everything else is given a lot of measurements.
Oh, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. So I'm like, wait a minute. Ezekiel said, and Zechariah gives similar testimony. He says, and behold, I saw a guy with a measuring stick going by me. You know? I'm like, what? So I don't know. Maybe John's a quantum leaper.
But, I mean, that is fascinating, the thought that Ezekiel and Zechariah may have seen John time travel back from 90 AD to, Ezekiel would have been, about 500 BC or thereabouts?
Something like that. Yeah.
700 BC, somewhere in that range.
Boy, that's awesome. That's assuming that the Apostle John not only saw these things, but given the measuring stick, he had to literally insert into the time-space continuum. That up until then he'd been looking at almost as a panopticon, insert mm-hmm. into it and actually take the measurements. If indeed he was doing that, I have read theories that when angels insert into our time-space continuum because they are not actually there, and John would not actually physically have been in heaven, he was there in the spirit. So if in his spirit he time-traveled into a different place and time, that this theory that I've read is that the angels incorporate themselves into material, that's why we see them as beings.
Yeah.
So it could, you may be right. I've never heard that theory before. I love that.
Yeah, and I've never seen it anywhere before, and it just simply came as a result of putting two columns together and matching Old Testament descriptions with New Testament descriptions.
It's, it's crazy. Getting in there and actually studying and reading. Oh.
The Bible is the coolest book on the planet. I'm sorry. There's nothing that can compare. Zechariah chapter 2 says, verse 1, when I looked around me again, I saw a man with a measuring stick in his hand, and I said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to measure Jerusalem to see how wide and how long it is. So I don't know. I just put it out there.
And John is an interesting character because we're told there's that kind of mysterious passage in the New Testament where Jesus said that there's one here who will not see death before my return.
Right.
And the speculation among the apostles was that John wasn't going to die.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, when he goes and he's there seeing the saints, he doesn't see himself.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
At least if he does, he doesn't mention it.
I don't actually believe that this is true, but I mean, the speculation is pretty cool. What if somewhere on planet Earth there's this little old man with a long beard just kind of walking around saying, come quickly, Lord Jesus, come quickly.
Yeah.
Well, for those who figured it out, I mean, that's John Thundercloud gets his name from John.
Oh, in Sharon's novels, John Thundercloud character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's other characters like that. You talked about one of them, Saint Germain. He's another really interesting, Count Germain.
Oh,
he
is
just the oddest character, assuming that the historical entries are true.
Yeah, he pops up. I did research on him back in the late 90s. Three characters, actually. Cassius Rufio Longinus,
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Owner of the Spear of Destiny. Cartaphilus is another one, and Ahasuerus, where the legend of the wandering Jew comes from. Mm-hmm. Ahasuerus, that legend, at least in the research that I did, appears to be the one who morphed into the character of Saint Germain, Count Germain.
Ahasuerus,
Ahasuerus, how you pronounce it. Really interesting. It's, it makes for great science fiction. That's what I say. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, but it makes for great science fiction. But
well, just remember that the Derek-alike, the weird spiritual entity that looked just like Derek. I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about that on our show.
I have.
But I was tormented by this guy, this creature, for, over a space of several years. At various times he'd show up. He told me, when I asked him the first time, I said, I know you're not Derek. Tell me your name. Because that's what we're always told, Jesus asks, tell me your name. And he said it was Ahasuerus.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's freaky.
Yeah.
Big time. Well, to get back on track a little bit, all of this stuff is really fascinating. And I think that looking at the scriptures and the things that John wrote in particular about Babylon, I believe Babylon's going to rise again as a world power. And I saw a clip with Joel Rosenberg talking to Glenn Beck. And Joel was saying, don't believe what you're seeing in mainstream media about Iraq. It's rising, and it's going to be a global, almost like a Walt Disney World of the world kind of thing for ancient artifacts and places, and they're trying to make it basically like a tourist center. that it could rise in prominence. And he was talking with Glenn Beck about it. And I thought, you know, what if the Magi came from Babylon delivering tremendous wealth that was stored up by Daniel and delivered it to the baby Jesus before he started his ministry? What if a repeat of that would happen in the last days, where the wealth of the wicked stored up for the righteous comes once again from Babylon to the body of Christ to do his work in the last days? So I began to think that way. And then I started to read through Exodus when the Jews, the Israelites, were leaving the land of Egypt. It said that all of the Egyptians gave them their silver and gold on the way out.
Oh, yeah.
Hmm.
So I thought, could be. I don't know. You know, just speculating, but. There's just too much going on over there, and again, these numbers coming up 3-2-2 and stuff. And so, in the book, I speculate that it could that dinar could RV or RI in the very near future. A lot of people are talking about it, like it could. And if that happens, I'm nothing more than a collateral beneficiary. Who's the real beneficiaries? Well, the players who set the whole thing up in the first place,
right?
You know, if the central bankers went in there with U.S. dollars when it was 3,000 to 1, you got to know they've got billions or trillions, all this money that Congress can't account for, maybe. Maybe it's stored up in monopoly money with anti-counterfeit measures unlike any other on the planet, mm-hmm. waiting for an RI or an RV, because it would literally reset the global economy in one day. And if that happened, everybody's calling to get on one currency anyway, you know, one world currency, and they certainly want off the U.S. dollar. So if it happened and the whole world reset, I know the U.S. dollar wouldn't be the standard. I speculate, what if the currency that saves the whole world is the new standard? And could that be why John talks about when, I think it's a third seal, goes off and it costs a denarius for a day's, you know, it's a day's wage for bread?
Mm-hmm.
Is it just a coincidence that John used that word? The denarius was probably the currency of his day. And Sharon, I thank you for pointing this out to me, that it was 1/72 the weight of silver or whatever at that time.
It was. And then number 72 comes up over and over.
There's the 72 again. So, you know, I don't know. I'm just speculating here, so don't anybody take my word for it. I'm not a qualified anything to give advice for financial advice. So
you know, none of us is. None of us is. We're all in there trying to figure it out.
Again, I'm just speculating, but it seems very interesting to me.
Well, we're not going to get to any of that New World Order stuff, as you say, the reset button. One thing I've been studying a lot lately, and I'll be getting into more, writing more about that in the very near future, are memes and what they actually represent in the kingdom to come, the enemy's kingdom to come. And one of the memes that we hear a lot is the reset button. And there's a commercial playing on the Super Bowl today that, if you haven't seen it online, we've got a link to it. You can watch it today. You can watch it tomorrow, whatever you want to do. But did you talk to him about this commercial at all?
Uh-huh.
It's a post-apocalyptic commercial for Chevy.
Trucks.
Oh, yeah. I think King Ross, I think, posted that. I think I saw that one.
One theory on it, that they represent the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Now, there are five guys, but two of them are identical twins.
Hmm.
Have you noticed that? Identical twins. So you actually have four people.
Trucks. And
did you notice the frogs falling from the sky?
The frogs falling from the sky. The black gentleman who's driving the black pickup truck offers Twinkies to everybody else. And I've seen that correlated to that he's famine.
Yeah.
And he's offering the only thing you're going to get, which has no nutritional value
it
whatsoever. That the gentleman in the red shirt who's driving the red pickup truck says Dave didn't make it because he's driving a Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And he's war. And the guy in the white pickup truck is the first one you see. And what's he got with him? He's got a dog. Now, what do we see in Orion?
Oh, yeah.
The dog star.
Sirius, the dog star, yeah.
Dog star. That's crazy.
I'm the one that picked up on the dog.
Yeah. You see why I love her.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, we're both blessed, Derek.
But you know what? You got to watch it.
I have these conversations all the time.
It's so
cool to have.
And there are so many people listening to us, Rob. I know you get the emails, too. They don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. definitely blessed. Sheila and I, we are totally, she's my soulmate without any question. We're on the exact same page with everything. She's the YouTube queen. If you can, if it can be found, she'll find it on YouTube.
That is so crazy. That is so crazy. Well, that commercial, there are little video things in there, like there's a crashed UFO.
There's a crashed UFO. Yes. There's like a giant, a broken giant alien-type robot with glowing eyes, which is like Transformers or Mecha Godzilla or something. Yeah. And then, of course, there's a newspaper with a headline saying, Mayan Doomsday, will Earth end today? So they hit on a lot of different memes there that, you know, and this is not just unique to this commercial, but we've seen this sort of drumbeat on various channels that used to actually show educational stuff like Discovery and the History Channel, National Geographic. Now they're showing all these channels like how, you know, 27 ways the world can end tomorrow, or surviving doomsday and all these various, and of course all these shows about the Mayan prophecies in 2012, all of this coming to a head. And of course, this commercial being rolled out in time for the 39th parallel Super Bowl in Indianapolis, which is, of course, in Diana's place.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Indianapolis has all sorts of pagan stuff.
Yeah. In fact, you mentioned a bit about earlier about, praying against some of these pagan architectural sites in Washington, D.C. There are a whole bunch of them in Indianapolis, Indiana. And a fellow there named Stephen Schroeder, who actually went into a park in downtown Indianapolis and was, I'm not going to get the story right, but anyway, he got himself into some trouble for trying to actually do something about the Statue of Pan. Which, when you actually read the Bible and do a little digging into how often they make references to the Seirim, S-E-I-R-I-M, or the goat gods or goat demons that the ancient Hebrews were being seduced by. You know, they were actually sacrificing to Leviticus 17:7. So they shall no more sacrifice their sacrifices to goat demons after whom they whore.
And
then you see, as you mentioned earlier, in the New Testament, where Jesus stands outside the Grotto of Pan at Caesarea Philippi and asks the question to Peter, who do you say I am?
And what's at the very center of the city?
The very center of the city is the
circle with a big old wiener in it.
That's right. In Indianapolis.
Circle Monument.
Yeah.
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis, right.
Oh, yeah, the Circle Monument.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
So, so some very interesting stuff there, but
we can go to war against these things in prayer, and I believe it. I really do.
Well, that's our best weapon.
It is. It's our only weapon, you know.
It is, but we also have the Word of God.
Yeah.
I mean, when we suit up in the book of Ephesians, when we're told what we use, what our weaponry on the field is, the sword is the Word of God.
That's right. But, you know, I don't think the average Christian, and I would lump myself in that same category, so I'm not meaning to insult anybody, is clueless to most of these things. Because I've always said you can't just read the Bible. It's not just a storybook. You've got to study it. And when you study, 2 Timothy 2:15, study to show yourself approved, that's where you find all these things. It's in the details. It's in the Hebrew. It's in the Greek. You know, and you've got to contrast these things in terms of context to other writings.
Right, that is so true.
It wasn't written in a void. You know, you have to take what they wrote in context to the time and place and culture of people that they're writing to.
You know, which is one of the reasons that I frankly defend reading books like Enoch and the Apocrypha, because I think those books help us. Those aren't necessarily, they're not, you know, spirit-breathed that I can prove, but I think that they give us a little insight into the people who are writing these books at the time and helps us to understand the background for the spirit-breathed Word of God.
Absolutely. I like the way Doug Hamp, he puts it. He says he treats those as biblical commentary.
Oh, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Are we running out of time?
We got about 5 more minutes.
That's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah, those books are fantastic. They paint the bigger picture. And I like to look at Enoch as sort of the blockbuster movie book. You know, it's just got all the, you know, it's Transformer-ish, you know what I mean? But Joshua is like a chick flick. it has all the relationships and, you know, the extra details. And,
you know. Oh, you are too funny.
But both work great together.
Hey, look, are you guys, you and Sheila going to be anywhere this summer? Any conferences or anything
yes,
like that, that you can talk about?
Yes, I got a call from Bob Ulrich from Prophecy in the News. Hopefully I'll be a speaker coming up for that one, Prophecy Summit.
Cool.
And had lunch with David Hitt a couple days ago with the second annual Future Congress, which is going to be held here in Dallas.
Oh, the hometown boy.
Yeah.
What are the dates for those two events?
Oh, man, I don't have it in front of me.
I think July 13th through the 15th is the one in Branson.
Yeah, and I want to say 3rd through the 5th of August is the other one.
So a couple of weeks apart. So if you want to take a visit down to, you know, toward the southwest and the south, go to Branson first and then down to Texas and then work your way back.
Mm-hmm.
Those should be two amazing conferences.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because the Branson conference is, as you mentioned, put on by Prophecy in the News, and we were just really impressed.
And this is the first year that they're putting one on.
Yeah.
I love the announcement. Gary Stearman says, it was like, duh.
Why don't we do this?
Why haven't we been doing this all along?
We've got about the most impressive address book of anybody out there
for
finding speakers.
So July 13th through the 15th, and there's some names that will be, I'm sure, released as time goes on. But I think we're going to be at the conference in Branson again this year, hosting the interview room, which is cool for us because we get to talk to all the fascinating people.
I know. The last time we did it, we both had presentations to do. This time, I think we're just going to be the interview people.
Oh, that's cool. I have a correction, actually, now that you mentioned that, because I was on one of your shows there, and we were talking about the 10% of the demons that were reserved. I said Mephistopheles. I was incorrect. It's Mastema.
Mastema.
Oh.
Thema. The disembodied spirits of the Nephilim are what we would call demons.
Right.
And they were all over the earth, and Noah was like, God, help us here. You know, we need some help. And God was going to put them all in prison. And Mastema stepped in and bargained for 10% that he could keep to do the work on earth. And that's found in the book of Jubilees, chapter 10.
Yeah. And
Have you read Noah Primeval yet?
Brian Godawa, who is an award-winning scriptwriter, so he has a lot in common with you, I'd imagine, has written a wonderful novel called Noah Primeval.
I saw his website just recently.
Yeah, you can get it on Kindle. It is so really, I mean, it's like Lord of the Rings meets
the Bible.
Book of Enoch.
Yeah.
The Bible? Cool.
Well, meets the Book of Enoch, yeah. And
nice.
Just imagine the Lord of the Rings with Tubal Cain as Gimli and Methuselah as sort of like an old Legolas.
Oh, Legolas. Oh, cool.
Because they have that kind of same relationship.
Crabby
nice.
Guys.
Yeah, and there are some stand and cheer moments.
It's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. And are you going to do anything more with Seed?
I am. Everything that I'm doing, including this book, is a means to that end. The book is the Babylon Rising, the First Shall Be the Last, is book one of four, which is the nonfiction foundation upon which the science fiction of Seed is based.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, I'm still in the mode of fundraising. We've got to raise $4 million to get that project going. So
we could give you $4.
Hey, that's four Nimrods. Let's go with an Abe instead. I'll take a five.
Abe, the vampire hunter.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And Washington is a zombie.
Washington the zombie. There you go. Well, I think on that.
On that note.
Oh boy, where do people find out about what you're doing these days, Rob?
SeedTheSeries.com is the website for the TV series we're working on, and BabylonRisingBooks.com, as well as BabylonRisingBlog.com.
All right. Rob Skiba has been our guest on this special edition, this Super Sunday edition of PID Radio. Rob, hang on. Don't hang up. We're going to play the closing theme here because we like to record this live to tape. Saves us on post-production time. So don't hang up. We'll say goodbye to you once the theme plays. But we'll just thank you for your attention over the past hour. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Thanks, Rob. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.